Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Sukkah Daf Lamed Zayin. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur 18 lines from the top. It might be easier simply to say in the middle of the omid. We are dealing with that which was mentioned in the Mishnah concerning the binding of the lulav together with the hadasim and aravos. And Rabbi Meir, Oimer Afilu B'Meshicha, we saw in the Mishnah that Rabbi Meir, as opposed to Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Meir allows you to use basically any material, even thread, that will bind the species together. Tanya, Omar Rabbi Meir, Maisa B'Akira Yushalayim. There was an incident involving the esteemed individuals of Yushalayim. Shoyu Oigdim Es Lulvehem B'Gimonios Shelzahov. They used to bind together their lulavim with the hadasim and aravos with strings or threads of gold. Omru Loi. Those who disagreed with Rabbi Meir reacted and said to him, Mishom Raya, from there you are trying to bring proof that you can use anything. Not so. The minoi hoyu oidemoisoi milamato. Mino means material that is from one of the four species used in the mitzvah of lulav. Could be a lulav, a palm, some palm fibers, or a hadas branch, or a rova branch. That is what was used to bind the hadasim and aravos. Milamata means from underneath. Above that, it's true that you saw golden strings, but that was wound around above the actual binding that was done by Mino, as Rabbi Yehuda had suggested. In our previous shiur, so we made reference to diagrams that you see in the Pirush Chai that indicate this. You can see on page 121 in the Pirush Chai, the book of illustrations that we've been using since the beginning of the Masechta, illustration 598. We continue in the Gemara. We have a topic heading and some markings that we want to explain. So on the side, the Nosei, we have written Hanchayot. It means directions, b'hachonas halulav v'igudo, directions in how to conduct yourself and how to prepare the lulav with the binding of the other materials, the other species. We will discuss the topic of chatzitza, an interposition, and l'kicha yedei dover acher, that has to do with taking the lulav, but without directly holding the lulav, but taking it through the another means, an intermediary item or device. That will become clearer as we look into the Gemara. You notice, if you scan ahead in the Gemara some geometric forms, you see the use of diamonds and double underlines. Both of them are series markings. The diamonds introduce rabba at the beginning of a new statement. Each the Gemara is broken down into a number of statements. Rabba introduces, he opens each statement, and rava reacts. So rava, we've assigned a different marking, the double underline, simply to contrast him with rava, with rabba, two different people. Rabba, the hey at the end, opens the respective statements, and Rava reacts. Now, Rabba and Rava cholkim b'shnei hanukudos d'liel. They argue over the topics we just mentioned, chatzitza and l'kicha yedei dover acher. Uba'oid nukudos hamofios b'omid beis. And you'll find that they argue over other points that are mentioned on Lamed Zayin Amid Beis. So now let's open the Gemara. Omar luhu rabo lano megadle hoishano debe resh galusa. Rabo spoke to the people in charge of preparing, of binding the lulav with the other species that worked in the home of the head of the exile, the exilarch, the resh galusa. And Rabo told them, ki gadlisu hoishano debe resh galusa, when you bind together the lulav, the hoshanas, the lulav with the other varieties for the resh galusa, shire bei beis yad, leave a literally a handle. If you look at illustration 598 in the Pirush Chai, there is a gimel at the bottom of that illustration. That's the beis yad. That's where you would grab it. You would hold it from there. Kihechi delo teve chatzitza, so that you wouldn't be you would be holding the lulav directly, as opposed to the whatever binding material that you wrapped around the lulav with. So you can see that there's a binding material above this. And you don't want to have a chatzitz, an interposition, between your hand and the lulav itself. Now, it would be easiest to understand this if we make the assumption, it may be the obvious assumption, that in the Reish Galusa they were not following Shitas Rabbi Yehuda, but they were following the approach of the Rabbonon. If we look in the Rashi, Shairei Beis Yad, Shairei Bei Beis Yad, Mitachas Le'eged, Shaloi Kuchen B'mokom Igdu, D'kosov Reinu Eged, Mina Mitzvah Kirabbonon, D'yamri Ein Tzorech Eged. The approach taken here is that the binding isn't really part of the mitzvah, like the Shitas of Rabbonon that declare that the lulav doesn't need a binding. Now, with that explanation, it could be that they might have even used the same variety for the binding. That gets you involved with another topic called min b'mino chotzeitz or eino chotzeitz. But suffice it to say that since, according to Rabbanan, it's not part of the mitzvah, and you want your hand to come directly in touch with the lulav, which is the mitzvah, so that's why Rabba is saying leave the bottom exposed without any binding around the bottom part of the lulav. We continue in the Gemara. Rava Omar. Rava says this isn't a problem. Even if you grab the lulav, you hold the lulav by the section, by the binding part, by the material that with which you wrapped around the lulav with the other species, it's okay. Kol lina'oso, anything that's there to beautify, eino chotzeitz. And this, by the way, fits in very well with the Shitas Rabbanon, that they hold, even though the binding is not necessary, nevertheless it was a mitzvah to bind it, and we saw that explained earlier in the Masechta, based on ze keli v'anvehu. Anvehu is I will glorify him. I will make things look nice. So a lulav bound together with the other species is nicer looking than loose loose items. And hence, it is not the binding, since it's there to beautify, to enhance the mitzvah, it's not an interposition. It's not a chatzitza in the first place. The Omar Rabba. Now a new halacha. Lo linkut inish hoshano besudra. Illustration 602 shows what might be happening. Sudra is a cloth, some fabric, another material. So he's saying not to grab the lulav with the fabric or the cloth of your clothing, as you can see illustrated. Deboino lakicha toma, because we require a complete, pure holding of the lulav, and holding it with something else interferes with this goal of lekicha tama. And by the way, the expression lekicha tama is based on the word ulekachtem. The pasuk says ulekachtem lochem b'yom harishon. Lekachtem is broken down into lekicha, and the tough mem at the end is tama, a complete taking, without any, say, foreign substance. To be you and the lulav, not with something else interfering. The Rava Omar, Rava reacts, and he says, "Lekicha yedei dover acher shmo lekicha." That even if you're taking the lulav with the aid of something else, in other words, you're holding the lulav while your hand is holding the cloth surrounding the lulav. So Rava says that's not a problem. That's called lekicha, taking it. The word lekicha again is based on the pasuk. It says ulekachtem lochem. That's the taking of the lulav. Ayidei dover acher through another means is nevertheless a fulfillment of lekicha, of taking, as the Torah dictates. You can see that we have a bracketed section, and the reason for this is to enable you to skip to the after the brackets, and you see immediately a new point is brought up, a new topic is brought up, where Rava and Rava have a new argument. The information contained in the brackets is simply background for what Rava just said. So the heart of the machlokus we saw, and now in the brackets we call this background material. Omar Rava, mino amino lo de lekicha yedei dover acher shmo lekicha. From where do I know to say that? That taking the lulav, even though it's through an intermediary or a foreign device, it's okay. And so from where do I know this? Disnan. Now, a word about the structure. On the side, under our Nosei Mivneh heading, we indicate Basograim. This is a heading for the material in the brackets. The triangles are Nisyonos Shel Rava. These are attempts on the part of Rava Lochiach to prove the Lekicha Yidei Dover Acher Shmo Lekicha. That where the Torah uses the word Lekicha, you shall take whatever. There are different mitzvos that involve your taking of something, where the Torah says that you shall take, and you take the item with something else, it's nevertheless considered legitimate, a fulfillment of the velokach of the Torah. So, where do I see this? This non. Illustration 607 is what we'll be referring to now. In that illustration, so you see a tube, you see a plant. It's called an azov, and it's important for the azov to be dipped into the liquid that you see in the tube. Now, this is in the context of the Por Aduma, which involves the sprinkling of an ash water mixture on someone who is defiled to the dead. He's Tomei Mace, so we sprinkle on him the Paraduma water with an azov that has to be dipped into the water, ash water mixture. So what happens if the azov, the azov plant is too short, the plant with its stem is too short? So this Mishnah says, Azov Kotzer, a short Azov, it's too short, Mesapkoi Bechut Uvekush, you can lengthen it with a string or with a kush. Kush is a utensil, it's a pointy type utensil that's used in the weaving or the spinning, the process of spinning wool. And you can see an illustration of the kush in the picture, and that will add length to the azov, the toivel, and then the immerse the azov in the water, umale, and bring it up, the oichez, the Ezov Umaz, and then you hold the Ezov itself and do the sprinkling. Amai, well, why is this good? Does it not say Velokach Vitoval Omar Rachmona? The Torah says that you shall take it, the Ezov, and dip it in the water. So you see Lekicha Elalav Shmamina. We see from this Mishnah that Lekicha Ezover Acher Shmo Lekicha, the taking of the Ezov and dipping it in the water with the intermediary of the kush or the chut is legitimate, even though the Torah said velokach. So we see lekicha yedei dover achir is considered lekicha. The Gemara questions. The Gemara says this case of the, we'll say, elongating of the ezov is not parallel to the lulav in the sudar. Mimai, how can you compare these? Dilma shiny hasam, the case of the ezov is different. Kevon de chabrei kegufei domi, since you attached it, you wedged the kush into the ezov, or you tied the string firmly around the ezov. That's a firm attachment. That's different than holding the lulav by the edge of your garment. So you can't prove from there, from the Ezov case, because there the attachment was a firm, solid attachment. It became like, it's as if it's the Ezov itself. So of course, if you're taking the Ezov itself and dunking it in the water, that's what you're supposed to do. So that doesn't prove our case by the lulav and the sudar. Elo mehocha, rather, from the following. Illustration 608. Well, what do we see there? We see a tube, and this tube has in it the ash of the Parah Aduma. And then we see Shekes Shaleven, that's a vessel that holds water, and there eventually what has to be done is that the ash has to be mixed in with the water in the preparation of the Parah Aduma ash water mixture for purification of the Tomei Mace. Now, the taking of the ash is governed by the pasuk that says velokhu, you shall take the ash and put it into the water. So from the simple reading of the pasuk, velokach means you shall take the ash. Let's see what the halacha says in these Tanaic sources. Nofal mishveferis l'shoikis, if the ash fell from the shveferis, from the tube, into the shoikis, the receptacle holding it's a stone receptacle holding the water drawn from the mayon, from the live spring. Pusel, that is not considered an effective preparation of the ash water mixture. In other words, the way the ash gets into the water is of significance. If the ash fell into the water, into the shoikis, which contains the water, so it's not proper. It's not in conformity to the Torah's expectations. We infer ha hipiloi hu kosher. If, however, the preparer of the ash water mixture held the tube and shook the ash into the water, but by holding the tube, he didn't hold the ash itself, but he held the tube and shook it like one would use a salt shaker, if you will, shaking the tube, the receptacle, causing the ash to go into the water. That's kosher, that's okay. Ah, you'll ask, Amai v'lokhu v'nosan omai rachmona? The Torah says you shall take the ash and put it into the water. Elolav, so we see from here, Shma mino, l'kicha yedei dover achir, the taking of the ash, but through the tube. Shmolakicha, that is a fulfillment of the Torah's requirement of velokhu, of taking. Likewise, with the lulav, lekachtem lechem biyom arishon, taking the lulav, but through something else, through holding the edge of your cloak, of your garment, the sudar example, is also a fulfillment, even though you're not holding the lulav itself. You're holding it in something else. Continuing in the Gemara, we also continue with illustration 609. What do we see? We see Hadassim and Aravas bound together and the Lulav separate. And the fellow's intention is to insert by force the Lulav into the Hadassim and Aravas. So in the Gemara, the Omar Rabba, Lo Lodutz Inish Lulva Bahishana, Lodutz is to wedge it in. Don't wedge the lulav into the hadassim arovas, as you can see in the illustration. The Vilma Nasri Tirpi, there's a concern that maybe Tirpi are leaves. Nasri is to fall off. Leaves of the hadassim arovas might get detached. They're not attached anymore to the stem. So they're loose leaves. Leaves are not the mitzvah. You have to take branches with leaves on it, but not loose leaves. So they've now become a separate, detached, non-mitzvah entity. So we're afraid that the leaves might get detached. V'have chatzitza. And then the lulav is not directly in contact with the hadassim and arovas. The leaves, these loose leaves, are now an interposition. They're a chatzitza. The Rova Omar, Rova says, no need to worry. Min b'mino eino chotzeitz. The leaves come from the hadassim and arovas. They're part of the same variety, the same species of plant. So, min b'mino, two things of a like nature, eino chotzeitz, do not pose a chatzitza, an interposition problem. The Omar Rabba, lo legus inish luva bohishana, demishtairi hutza v'have chatzitza. One is not to cut, let's say a person has a lulav with bound together with the hadassim arovas, and he finds it too long, so he wants to shorten it. So Rabbo is telling us that he should not cut the lulav while it's together with the hadassim and arovas, because nature of lulav, the way the lulav is, you have the leaves attached to the shedra, to the spine. And if you look in illustration 438 on page 89, if you look carefully at that, this is what we are talking about now, not to cut the lulav from the bottom, because if you do, the leaves that were attached to the shedra lower than your cut mark are now not attached to the shedra anymore, as you can see if you look closely at the illustration. So what do you have? You've got loose lulav leaves that are still bound together with the dasam and the rovis. Now those loose lulav leaves are the outer leaves of the lulav. Those are that's the point of contact of the hadassim and arovas. Now loose lula leaves are no longer part of the mitzvah. They're just loose leaves. So Rabbah is saying, don't cut the lulav while it's bound together with the hadassim arovas, because you're going to create this loose leaf situation, and that will be a chatzitza, since they're not part of the mitzvah. So they're blocking the hadassim and arovas from contact with the lulav itself. The chatzitza might also be in terms of you're going to be holding the loose leaves and not the lulav itself. Again, a problem of chatzitza as far as Rabbah is concerned. The Rava Omar, Rava answers like he answered before, min b'mino eino chotzeitz. Since these are leaves of the lulav anyway, they are from the same material as the mitzvah itself, hence they don't pose a problem. It's called min b'mino, two like substances do not create a chatzitza. as we go on, you might notice, if you look carefully at the markings, the diamonds look a little different now. There's a shaded in bottom, and we have a note indicating that the reason for this is that as the list of Rabo halachas go on, Rava is silent. He doesn't come to argue in these halachas. The Omar Rabo. Hadas shel mitzvah osu l'riach boi. The hadas, the myrtle branch that you dedicated, that you tied together with your lulav, you're not allowed to smell it. Esrog shel mitzvah mutar l'riach boi. The esrog that you're using for your mitzvah, you're allowed to smell it. The obvious question is, what's the difference? My time off. So why the distinction? Answer: Hadas de la recha koi. The myrtle branch is cultivated as a fragrance, as a fragrant plant. People enjoy the aroma or the smell that comes forth from the hadas. So its original purpose is for reach. Now, when I set it aside for the mitzvah, I removed it. I disconnected it, so to speak, from its original purpose, its original design purpose. Ki aktse, when I set it aside for the mitzvah, me recho aktse, I set it aside from its original designed purpose as a source of smell. In contrast, though, esrog, Dilachilokoi. Esrog is a fruit that people cultivate for eating purposes. Ki akze, when he set it aside for the mitzvah, me achilo akze, he set it aside, removed it, disconnected it from its original role of something that you would eat. So, therefore, Rabo's din remains that the hadas of the mitzvah was set aside, it was removed from its primary role, smelling. Therefore, you're not allowed to smell it. This concept is of muktza is interesting. It's primary. We're familiar with it primarily from the realm of Shabbos, where we use the term muktza left and right. The concept here might be similar to the concept you find by kochim, where people sanctify things, people dedicate things. So this is sanctified to the extent that it's dedicated to the mitzvah, and with that it's removed from its original role, and you're not, since it's now dedicated to be part of the mitzvah, you're not allowed to use it for what it originally was designed. But using it for something tangential isn't a violation of the sanctity that with which it's imbued right now. This, of course, these are points that are unique to the realm of mitzvahs as opposed to formal sanctification for sacrificial purposes. There, the story is much more restrictive. The Omar Rabba, we continue in the Gemara. Hadas, this section has to do with Hilchus Shabbos. It's not a reference to the Hadas of Sukkis. It says hadas b'mechubar mutar l'riachbo. The hadas, while it's still attached to its parent plant, the bush, the myrtle bush, while it's still attached, mutar l'riachbo, you can smell it. And we're talking again on Shabbos. You can go near the bush and smell it. Esrog b'mechubar osu l'riachbo. And esrog, here, notice the switch around from the halacha just before. Here we're now strict with regard to the esrog. If the esrog is attached to the tree, you're not allowed to go smell it. My time off. Why the distinction? Hadas to the riach kai, the hadas, whose main purpose is for smelling, ishor slay, if you allow him to smell it, b'mechubar, lo osil mikzeh, he's not going to come to cut it off. He's benefiting from it in its primary role while it's attached. So he doesn't. There's no motivation. There's no incentive for him to cut it off. So we're not risking anything by letting him smell a hadas b'mechubar on Shabbos. Esrog, on the other hand, Vilachilokoi, that is designed for eating. Yishoras lei, if you allow him to smell it, osi lemigzei. He, because of his appetite that was aroused by smelling it, he's going to come to forget himself, forget that it's Shabbos, and cut it off. Rashi adds, even if he doesn't cut it off, but he does come to eat it, eating it from directly from the tree is the ultimate in detaching it, of course, and forbidden on Shabbos. V'yomar rabo, lulav v'min v'esrog v'smoil. When fulfilling the mitzvah, the lulav is held in the right hand, it's the more prominent hand, and the esrog in the left hand. My taimo, why the difference? Why are we giving, let's say, precedence or preeminence to the lulav? The Gemara answers, Hani tlosa mitzvahs v'hai chada mitzvah. The lulav has three mitzvahs. What do we mean by that? There's the lulav, there's the hadasim, and the aravas, three separate entities. And therefore, the lulav, being that it's bound together with the others, has greater prominence. And then, and hence, it's taken with the right, the more prominent hand. V'hai chado mitzvah, the esrog represents one mitzvah. Omer le'rvimiel Rabbi Zrika, my tam lo mevorchinon elo al netilas lulav. Why is that al netilas lulav the text of the bracha? Technically, you could have said al netilas esrog or al netilas hadasim. Why lulav? So the Gemara answers, Hayul ugavoya mikulan, since it's higher than the other species. Question, v'ligbe le'esrog v'livrich, why not raise the esrog? So it'll be higher and make the bracha over the esrog. Omar le'i, hayul ubamino gavoya mikulan. Not that while you hold it, the lulav is taller than the rest, but rather the tree on which the lulav grows is taller than any of the other plants mentioned. It's taller than the esrog tree, taller than the hadasim and the aravas as well. So because in its natural state the lulav is higher than the rest, it is held, it is the text of the bracha focuses on the lulav. The Gemara then shows you the prominence we attach to the lulav in two respects. It being held in the right hand, and we said that's because there are three mitzvahs, hence it's given prominence by being held in the right hand. And as far as the text of the bracha, lulav is featured because it physically is the tallest of all of the varieties, the species of the four minim. The Mishnah deals with the shaking of the lulav. It's called the ni'anu'im. Ve'hechon hoyu mina'anim. Where in the prayers was the lulav shaken? Answer, behoydu l'Hashem. This is from what we call the Hallel. So from behoydu l'Hashem, tchila v'sof. Rashi says, Tchila v'sof, hodu shebetchila saperek, v'hodu shebesof haperek, v'sof hahalel. Min hoidu, hodu l'ashem kitov kilam sto, at sof hahalel, chado parshasa, b'minyan parshasa, shall say for Tehillim. From the posuk that we read, hodu l'ashem kitov kilam sto, till the very end of the hallel is one long perek. So, at the beginning of that perek, you read Hodu Lashem Kitov, and the end of that perek ends off also with Hodu Lashem Ki Tov Ki Masto. So the Mishnah is saying at those Hodus you do a lulav shaking. Where else? Bono Hashem Oshiana Divrei Beis Hillel. When you say that pasuk, Beis Hillel says shake the lulav. Ubeis Shamay Omrim Af Bono Hashem Hatzlichana. In reciting that pasuk, there is a lulav shaking as well. Om Rabbi Kiva, Sofa Yisi Baram Gamliel, Rabbi Yeshua. Sofa means I was gazing upon, I was looking upon Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Yeshua, Shekola Om Hoyu Menanim Esulfehem. Everyone, the congregation, were shaking their loves. Vehem Lo Neanu Elo Va'ono Hashem Hoshiona. They shook the lulav only at the Ono Hashem pasuk. The Mishnah opened up with a question of where is the shaking done? Where in the davening and the prayers is the shaking done? In asking where is shaking done, there's an assumption made that there is shaking in the first place. Well, we didn't see that in the Mishnah. The Gemara asks, Nianua Mandekar Shmei, the shaking, who made any mention of it? The Gemara says, oh, you may have forgotten. Hosam koi. We had a Mishnah, albeit a long way back, but it said, Kol lulav shiesh bo shlosha tvachim kidei l'naneya bo kosher. In talking about the dimensions of the lulav, the length of the lulav, it said, a lulav that has three tvachim and enough with which to shake it, that's a kosher lulav. So we dashed underlined the main words, kidei l'nanei abo. Part of the lulav dimension contains the allocation of lulav length for shaking purposes. So we see that shaking is part of the lulav. The Ko'amar, and then our Mishnah asks, heichon minanin, where does this shaking take place in the prayers, specifically in the Hallel. Tanan Hossam. Gemara cites a Tanaic source that is relevant to our topic only because this other source deals with shaking or waving of the item. It so happens to be the topic of the Shtei Alechem and the Kivsei Atzeres. These are two loaves that are brought in the Beis HaMikdash on the holiday of Shavuos along with two sheep. And the way the mitzvah there is fulfilled is through a waving action, a moving action. And you can see in the Pirush Chai, page 123, picture 610, you can see two sheep, that's the Kivsei Atzeres, and above them what might look like inverted sofas or tables. Those are really loaves. They're special loaves, and they have a special shape to them, and that's what they look like. So we have as Tanaic source, it says, Shtei Alechem u'shnei Kivsei Atzeres keitzeru oseh. How do you deal with them? The two sheep with the two loaves. Answer, Meniach Shtei Halechem Al Gabi Shnei Hakvosim. The two loaves are placed on top of the two sheep. Umeniach Yodoi Tachtehen, and you insert your hands underneath. Umeinif, Umalif, Umevi. And Meinif has to do a waving action. Molich Umevi is a back and forth movement. Malo Morid is an up down movement. Shnemar, the pasuk says, "Asher hunaf, v'asher huram." The term hunaf is moylich umevi. That's where you push it out and then bring it back toward you, and huram is raising it up and then lowering it down. The Gemara now elaborates on this. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, moylich umevi. Lami Sheho Arba Ruchos Shalo. So Molech Umevi is a reference to a we'll call lateral action. and we're moving the Shtei Alechem with Kivsa Tzeres back and forth to indicate the different directions and who to whom do the directions belong? Obviously to the Almighty. So we're doing this in honor of the Almighty. This waving action is a type of action acknowledging the Almighty. And likewise, Malu Morid, Lemi Shashamay Vorat Shalo, we raise up and lower down to in honor of toward the one who is the owner of the heavens and the earth, to whom they belong. B'marova masnu hachi. We often squiggle underline expressions that indicate a second version or a transition. Here we have a second version of the explanation for hoylocha and hoyvo. Amar of Chamo bar Ukva, Amar of Yosi bar Bichanina, Moylichu Mevi. The lateral movement is Kidei Latzo Ruchos Ros. It's in honor of this. Our hope is that the Almighty will withhold storm-type winds, bad winds. Other kinds of winds also might be described as bad winds. Malu Moirid, the vertical movement up-down, Kidei Latzor Tlolim Royim, so as to hold back negative types of dew. Omer Rav Yossi Bar Ovin, V'teimo Rav Yossi Bar Zavila. So Rav Yossi teaches Zois Oimeres. This shows us, we continue at the top of Lamed Ches Amud Aleph, Shiore Mitzvah Ma'akvin Es HaPuranus. Shiore Mitzvah is an expression meaning subsidiary aspects of the mitzvah, meaning it's not the main mitzvah. These, what we're describing now as the waving action, is not binding in order to get credit for having done the mitzvah. But nevertheless, it is done. It's practiced, even though it's not the main show. And if you were to skip it altogether, you would still fulfill the mitzvah. So there, hence we call this shiore mitzvah. The waving action is shiore mitzvah. The word shirayim literally is something left over. It's not the main thing anymore. It's just a leftover. Me'akfin es ha'puranos. They have that which is subsidiary to the mitzvah has the power of restraining danger, puranos, punishment. Sharei tenufa. The waving of the Shtei Alechem, Shiore Mitzvah, it's, as we termed it, not the main mitzvah, but rather Shiore Mitzvah. Vaitzeres Ruchais Utzloli Moim, and as we just described, it has the power of restraining negative forces, negative winds and views. V'yomar Rava V'chein B'lulav, and likewise with the Lulav. And Rashi says, Molech Mevi Malu Morid, there's lateral motions and vertical motions. Ravacha Bar Yankiv Mamti Lei Umaisi Lei. Ravacha Bar Yankiv did this with his Lulav. He was Molech Mevi Mamti is to push it away, and Maisi bring it back toward you. And he made a declaration as he did that, and he said, "Omar Dain Gira Be'ene Desitnas." Dain means this is a Gira, an arrow in the eye of the Satan. In other words, he's showing Rav Acha was challenging the Satan. The Satan, amongst his different roles, is to try to keep people from doing mitzvahs. So Rav Acha was demonstrating that this is like an arrow into the Satan's eye, that he doesn't have the power to disconnect us from the yoke of mitzvos. V'lav milsehi. The Gemara takes issue with Rav Acha's behavior, and he says this is not the right thing to do. In other words, it's not the right thing to outrightly challenge the Satan. Mishum de'osi le'igruye bay. That will only infuriate the Satan, causing even greater Yetzirah to say deter a person from fulfilling mitzvahs. So we go through the motions, and you're supposed to have kavonas for what the motion represents, but don't make a formal declaration or challenge to the satan. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.